Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this October 26th edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with YCRadio.org. This is a countdown to one of the most consequential elections in the history of these United States of America edition of Vantage Point, because in 8 days, some people, not all people, in fact, literally millions of will not be. Only about 45%, about maybe 55%, maybe high as 60%, but there'll be 40% of the whole electorate in this country will be snoring, but those who are activated will be marching on ballot boxes, and they already are. Today we're going to have hopefully a very informative program. We continue to talk about the quest for reparations. Today we go to Elaine, Arkansas, to talk about the quest for reparations there. You really want to hear the story of the massacre, Elaine massacre, but the incredible resilience and determination of the survivors and the descendants, if you will. We'll be talking about that. But then we're going up on the soapbox. We want to, you know, talk about the black vote. Will the black vote elect Trump, actually? And then what's up with Diddy, Cube, and 50 Cent, and all them other folk out there, all the rappers and hip-hop activists who are just getting all up in it? And we want to talk about what it is that they're engaged with and what they're talking about out there. And you will open up the phones. We're going to have probably, hopefully, about 25 minutes for you to call in with your opinions, rapid fire on the soapbox. But before we do that, again, we join with our colleagues and producers across the dials of WBAI, urging discipline. We've done a relatively good job here in the Northeast because the leadership, you know, you may disagree with Governor Cuomo on some things, but on this one, he's been one of the models for the nation, and people have responded, you know, 95% or so. You still see some people out here who decide to do go their own way. But by and large, there's been discipline. And we do need to avoid quarantine, mask, whatever you want, fatigue. This is no time to let up. The second wave is here. And that second wave is here in part because of the lack of discipline of others from other states and other regions, you know, who are now coming and infecting people in New York. And then just the course of this vicious virus. So be disciplined. I'm reminded, 55th anniversary, had the opportunity to be on with Dr. Maulana Karinga. 55th anniversary of the Nguzu Saba. One of the critical principles is Ujima, collective work and responsibility, which is the centerpiece of the African worldview, the African way of life, where we believe in mutual responsibility and mutual obligation to each other. We, us, and I, we us, and our, as opposed to me, myself, and I. And so we really, really appreciate people just that shared values. This doesn't matter what race or ethnicity you are. These values apply. So it's Ujima time. It's Ujima time, collective work and responsibility to each other. In that regard, this uptick has people incredibly anxious. We're delighted that WBAI is supporting the Community Cares Listening Line. We've had very positive feedback from that. The Black Family Summit of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century has qualified, capable, able listeners, social workers, psychiatrists, psychologists, all prepared to listen and direct you to counseling if you choose to do it or to have that. The number to call is 877-719-1117, 877-719-1117, if you will. And again, you know, voter registration is over, but early voting is happening. Early voting is happening. And that means that, between now and November 1st, I assume that's probably Sunday, you'll be able to go to various places. You can go to the internet and check it out. Check, just Google the election Board of Elections, and they'll give you the various sites. From where I live, it's just happened to be fortuitous that I can go to, my wife and partner ride to York College, where we know that there's a site there. But there are sites all over the city, and there are millions of people who are lining up and or standing in line, determined that ain't nobody gonna turn us around. Song from the Civil Rights Movement, ain't that nobody turn us around for casting our ballots. So that's kind of my opening commentary as we move to talk about the topic for today. Looking forward to our conversation with our guest, and our guest will be Dr. Ivor Carruthers, who's the General Secretary of the Samuel DeWitt Proctor Conference, formidable faith organization, the most progressive faith organization in these United States of America and also globally with its reach. She is also a commissioner with the National African American Reparations Commission. She will be joined by a descendant of the Elaine Massacre, Miss Lenora Marshall, who is the vice president of the Elaine Legacy Center. We're waiting for them to join us for our conversation. Do we have them online? Are our guests online yet?
Yep, they're ready. They're on.
Okay, all right. I wasn't aware of it. All right, well, let's go right to our interview. We welcome to our Vantage Point audience, Dr. Ivor Carruthers and Miss Lenora Marshall. Welcome both of you to Vantage Point.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Daniel.
All right, Dr. Carruthers, you're no stranger to my program. You've been on and on various occasions talking about reparations and other issues, but I'd like for you to set the table for us. And I say it with some anguish because these we talk about Tulsa, and there have just been so many massacres of black people, and then particularly in general season, but it was in and around the 1919, 1920, 1921. It was just like open season. And actually, there are many, many people who don't know about these massacres. And frankly, a lot of black people just may know, and just it's just very traumatic. But it's like in the tradition of the Maiafa, Reverend Johnny Ray Youngblood, saying we have to go back in order to look at the past in order to face the future and to be strong moving forward. So would you just set the table and tell our audience about the Elaine Massacre?
Well, yes, and first and foremost, I just want to thank you, Ron, for continuing to provide leadership and to be a voice with great sacrifice to continue to make spaces and places for our story to be told. When you asked me to set the table, I think about setting the table literally with my grandparents, and that would mean putting a tablecloth on the table and putting some dishes down and figuring out what the composition of this meal is going to be. And I would just say that in doing that, and what we're doing today is really what I call the Sankofa historiography. In other words, we have got to go back and reclaim our history in order to make sense out of the moment we're in so that we can take control and recreate and build our and claim and make for our own future because it is in our hands. And so as we think about this moment in history in the United States and what we're up against, the trauma and the multiple pandemics we have been dealing with over the last few months with much intensity, no letup in sight. As you just said at the end of the last segment, we can't turn around, we can't give up. And so when we look at these massacres that occurred in 1919, in particular around that time, 1920, 21, one of the things that is the story that is missed more often than not is the effort to hide those massacres, but also to recreate a myth that the move north of black people was a move because of the jobs and because the Defender, Chicago Defender, put headlines at the top of the paper, "Here are jobs." That was an enticement, but what was also an enticement were the massacres that occurred. And those massacres, including the significant one in Elaine, Arkansas, had hundreds of people murdered, some in a church, while they were planning against those who would take their labor, their products that they had raised, refused to pay them for the products that they brought to market. They were organizing themselves, and they became victims of white vigilantes who came and killed them. One of the most significant mass murders that occurred in this country. And that's a story we need to hear, to know, and to memorialize in ways that keep us ever going forward and backwards never.
So, Dr. Carruthers, talk to us about how the Samuel D. Proctor Conference actually connected with the descendants and how you began to build relationships, which really sort of brings us will bring us to our conversation with Ms. Marshall in a minute. But just, you've done such incredible work. So would you just tell us about that part of the work?
Well, as a Proctor Conference, we're engaged in this Sankofa historiography in the language of doing sacred memory ministry. In other words, Deuteronomy teaches that you must remember where God met you and where God was with you. And you must teach that to your children and your children's children. And so we think that memory telling, storytelling, narrative telling is sacred work. It's within that context, then, that we began to convene and commission truth-telling commissions in various places and spaces where our story needed to be commemorated and passed on to our children. And one of those places was Elaine, Arkansas, where in our research, we realized that so much had not been said about the history of what happened there. And I then had a personal stake in the ground because it turns out that part of my family, because of that massacre, left, and not only left to come north, which is how my family got to Illinois, but one side of my family actually ended up in Brazil. So I have five generations of people in Brazil as a result of the massacre. So it was the combination of the need for us as ministry to tell this story and my personal commitment to telling the story that Proctor landed in Elaine, where we met some wonderful people, including Miss Lenora and the entire Elaine Legacy Center, as a part of the work we were doing actually in Abbeville, South Carolina, around a lynching. And so that's how we got to this table, and now we're a strong part of the family, and we look forward to our collaboration.
Well, very good. Ms. Lenora Marshall, thank you so much for taking time today to be with us on here on Vantage Point on WBAI 99.5 FM and really streaming throughout the country and throughout the world, because we really wanted to have your voice really speaking on behalf of the descendants to talk about your experiences, but also to talk about what the descendants are demanding in terms of justice for the families and community.
Thank you so much, Dr. Tanya, for having us on today. And most of us, the African Americans, still living in the area of the killing fields of 1919, are descendants of the lynching, the racial terror, and the land loss happened before, during, and after the massacre, which was 101 years ago, probably the largest racial conflict in U.S. history. And the community of Elaine itself was destroyed. Still today, we as a community, poor, without the resources, most communities in the United States destroyed. So to achieve justice, we both restorative justice for the past and concrete changes in how we live today. We're expecting to achieve justice both as individuals and as a community. Now, families want compensation for individual lives, land, and labor law. Families want asunder. This is separate from the community's reparations we are modeling with you. But we are actively working on it. I was in New York earlier last year with partners trying to figure this out. And today we want to focus on community reparations, we as a community of descendants in Elaine are building our village into a center of Delta spirituality, culture, music, art, and education, so we can all have average income and wealth through tourism and educational events. The National African American Reparations Commission and the Samuel D. Witt Proctor Center are key components making this possible.
Right. Talk to us about the Elaine Legacy Center, because, you know, one of the things that's so remarkable is the people have come together. And by the way, it just struck me, and I hope our audience hears what you just said. 101 years. I mean, this is how long? How long will it take for justice to come? 101 years. Tulsa coming up on 100 years. I mean, this is just, you know, just amazing and tragic that this is going on, and it's just like business as usual for far too long. So talk to us about the Elaine Legacy Center and how it's been organized and what its role is, and kind of, you know, as kind of the hub, the catalyst for organizing the people.
Okay, well, the Elaine Legacy Center actually started about 10 years ago when we started with a program called Healing of the Land here in Elaine. And the descendants still living here who are working nationally, we're working nationally and internationally to bring equity here. The Elaine Legacy Center is the organized nonprofit through whom we work. What we do grows out of our talking together on what we need. And our mission is twofold: to research, preserve, and share the oral stories of Elaine. And our oral stories are so different from what many read in books. Our family stories are of land we once owned and had taken from us, of proud successful people who came here, because here was a place to own the land and make a good living, and stories of the teachers and learning, stories of business people. If you just read books out there, you think that we were only poor sharecroppers. But we owned our land, and a family member, I recall, told us that you could purchase an acre of land for 75 cents. So the Legacy Center are gathering the stories and preserving what we hear. We share them with local people and people from across the nation and the world. And the Legacy Center will continue to focus on not just our past, but becoming a leader in civil rights nationally. And we will always be rural. We will always be a voice for rural civil rights. And we hope to join with others as we are all need to have a need to be heard.
Now, I wanted you to also, the incredible work that's being done, unfortunately, like we find around the country all too often, you know, there is resistance or neglect, or people act like, you know, justice is not warranted. So I'm wondering, and I know I've heard a little bit about, you know, people trying to take advantage of the Legacy Center or what it's attempting to do, people trying to create alternative cultural models for tourism, and then sometimes, in some instances, outright rejection. So would you just tell us a little bit, share with our national audience what some of the responses have been? I guess there's probably been some positive ones perhaps, but just share with us what the response has been to the work.
Okay, well, we are finally sharing the stories our families passed down to us. For years, we've just kind of been under a gag order where we were not able to freely talk about this. But many of us are featured in the new documentary soon to be released in Elaine, and it's directed by Michael Wilson out of California and Little Rock. And that film highlights our stories of land ownership and land theft and racial terror. Our call for reparations is loud. The Elaine Legacy Center has become more than a voice for our past. It's a voice for civil rights, for our nation, and for the world. It's a center for our children to achieve equity in education, even though they've been 25 and 75 miles from their public schools. We believe in partnering with partners like the NAARC, the SBTC, the National Council of Churches. Remember 2019, who is funding right now music and the arts for our young people. We'll just be the rule cog in the wheel. We are looking forward to support. We know that there are going to be barriers to break. We are reminded that at our 100th anniversary commemoration service last September, more than 300 people came from across the nation. But every white church in Elaine canceled their service that day, that Sunday, and left town. We still have work to do, but we are really ready to do whatever God requires of us to achieve restorative justice, healing of our land, and live together as brothers and sisters of God's Son, Jesus.
Wonderful, wonderful. Dr. Carruthers, would you sort of also share, because you talked about the fact that we've come together and we're working with in a remarkable partnership with the Elaine Legacy Center, with our sister Miss Marshall and others. Would you just sort of talk a bit about what is envisioned in terms of the National African American Reparations Commission, the Fund for Reparations now, and the Samuel D. Wood Proctor Conference, and joining in and supporting the work there on the ground?
Sure. I am very, very privileged to serve with Ron as a member of the National African American Reparations Commission. He convenes us on a regular basis. And we have been at this work for, individually many, many decades, but officially for certainly almost a decade, not quite. And as the National African American Reparations Commission, it is our charge to facilitate the movement of reparations forward with a focus around public policy at the level of the government in terms of Congress and the bill that's called H.R. 40, and to also relate to community efforts all over the country as they begin to pick up the call for reparations and to really look at remedies. It's within that history, then, that the National African American Reparations Commission, which we call NARC, received a call from a young European white young person who said that they had a heart to be an ally and wanted to walk with the commission in order to provide support for remedies around reparatory justice. And so his organization, Fund for Reparations Now, the Samuel DeWitt Proctor Conference, and NARC have engaged in an official partnership in which we are co-journeying with the community of Elaine, listening to them, helping them to find resources to implement the vision and priorities that they have identified. Ms. Marshall talked about, breaking the silence. There was actually a poster after the massacre that told the people to hush mouth. Just go back to work and hush mouth. Wow. And so the audacity to break the silence then and to break the silence now is what we're doing. We're going to, for example, work together to create a memorial garden, a memorial space that will be sacred and consecrated. Richard Wright, the author, his uncle was lynched in Elaine, Arkansas, and never had a real service. And so Ms. Marshall, who is also an evangelist, will participate as, of course, one of the clergy leaders in Elaine, as we think about ways we can commemorate the life of Richard Wright's uncle. And we're doing other things such as trying to get access and find records that support the communal and individual claims for reparations, and to figure out if we can find a university partner who might want to create an extension program so that those who seek to have continuing education classes and actually get a degree if they choose to can do so without leaving the community.
Wow, this is really, really, really wonderful for our audience to hear this and to really see how the movement for reparations is unfolding, the role that NARC is playing as it unites with and listens to and joins these various reparations movements on the ground, and no more important one than Elaine, Arkansas. Ms. Marshall, I guess as we conclude, could you talk about ways in which the community, I mean, our listening audience around the country can support, and perhaps you can share maybe a contact information, how people can go to a website or how they might be able to connect. I know this documentary is coming out. We certainly are going to support that. And when we get the word, we're going to share it all over the country so people will be able to, you know, connect with that. So we're all in. But share with our audience ways in which they can connect and be supportive.
Well, we are very appreciative of the National AFAM Reparations Commission and Reparations Now. Thank you. We're very appreciative of the Samuel Hewitt Proctor Conference for coordinating the Appreciation Commission hearing in Elaine and in Arkansas. That also means the support of Judge Wendell Griffin, perhaps. He's probably one of Arkansas's strongest voices for social justice today. And our plan set the tone for a different tomorrow for Elaine. And that goes two ways. We want to preserve and learn from our past and provide equity for families and young people now in poverty. And developing the business plan for restoration and operation of the Elaine Museum and Civil Rights Center has urgency. We want the museum open as soon as we possibly can. So there are so many ways that we can receive that support. We have a memorial park that we're working to obtain. We plan to invite HBCU sculpture specialists to compete for the opportunity to sculpt the Elaine Trail. And that will go to the memorial park along with the Tomb of the Unknown and other important markers. Our research into our oral stories is ongoing. So whatever someone can do to make a contribution, it's absolutely appreciative, appreciated. I do have some contact numbers. I can be reached. Lenora Marshall at 870-827-6677. I can also be reached at 870-995-1530. And also the Elaine Legacy Center, you can contact us there at the center.
Okay. All right. 870. I'm going to focus on one number, 870-827-6677. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Well, because we're going to put it out there and you're going to get some calls probably from our listening audience. We'll continue to talk about it as we I go into my next segment. Dr. Carruthers, again, a very, very strong agenda. A reparative agenda has been laid out. Share with our audience ways in which they can support and how they might also reach the Samuel D. Witt Proctor Conference as a way of supporting as well.
Right. Well, for this week, go to Proctor Power the polls and register to vote. Go and be supportive to those who are standing in line to the extent that you can, and continue to stay prayerful and fearless as we exercise our rights. And then we have our annual convening coming up. It's called Holy Rage. And in the midst of Holy Rage, we have Holy Hope. And so go to the website, www.sdpconference.info, and you can get information on all the work we're doing. Thank you so much, Dr. Daniel.
All right. Okay. So, again, the quest for reparations in Elaine, Arkansas. You've heard it from Dr. Iva Carruthers, but equally important, if not more so, from Miss Lenora Marshall, who's laid out the story of not only the massacre, but the resilience, the strength, the organizing that's taking place. So up out of this disaster that took place, this tragedy, there will be an incredible triumph. So Miss Marshall, we thank you so much. Please give our thanks to all of the people with the Elaine Legacy Center, because we're going to be seeing you at least virtually soon, and we hope to be on the ground as soon as possible as well. And Dr. Carruthers, again, thank you so much for being a regular guest here on Vantage Point. Thank you both for being with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Okay. So, folks, again, 870-827-6677. We'll connect you with Ms. Lenora Marshall. She is a descendant. She is of the Elaine Mass 101 years ago. And we in the National African American Reparations Commission, partnering with the Samuel D. Proctor Conference and the Fund for Reparations Now, which is a progressive anti-white, anti-racism formation that is essentially become affiliated with NARC, are doing this work. And what's happening is that the Fund for Reparations Now has actually been raising resources to meet that agenda that you held, that you heard being spelled out. We are responding to the particular specific agenda laid out by the descendants there, and both individually and in community, we are going to see to it that a reparatory justice comes to Elaine, Arkansas. Okay, shifting up, you can now go to your phones, because I said we were going to open the phones and have a conversation, right? And we hope to get as many calls in as possible. And of course, that's 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. And, you know, I'm not going to talk a lot, because we want to hear from you. You heard Dr. Iva Carruthers talk about voting. Now, not everybody is impressed with that message. Some people are saying they are not going to vote, don't want to vote, see no reason to vote. And you're certainly welcome to articulate that view as well. One of the most consequential elections in the history of these United States of America, without question, in my opinion. I may be off, I may be wrong. What do I know about this? But I think I know a thing or two, because I've been engaged for years around these issues. And so what we have, there are some choices, and the question is, with 8 days left, it's been called consequential for a reason, because we have never, ever quite seen anything like the last almost 4 years in so many ways. And the question is, and some would argue, and I would be among them, that this is about the heart and soul of these United States of America. There are all kind of plots, including the selection, probably even as we speak, of a right-wing, reactionary, ultra-conservative justice of the Supreme Court. Wonderful person, no doubt. Nice family person and all of that. This is not personal. It's ideological. It's about what will happen when you select people to the court who are antithetical to labor, women's rights, LGBTQI rights, the rights of the questions of an environment and labor. All of these rights are at stake. I call it like a potentially Plessy versus Ferguson moment, you know, after the Reconstruction and the attack against Reconstruction, you know, the emergence of Jim Crow and Plessy versus Ferguson, the Supreme Court sanctioned. It was the body that put its stamp of approval. And that's what the court will do. This person will be on the Supreme Court well beyond presidential terms of maximum of 8 years, likely 40 years. And so the question becomes, where do you stand? What do you see? How are you engaged? 212-209-2877. There were some who are going to vote for the orange man. You should call them and maybe express your reason why. Others may be voting for what people are calling the other person, who is the old white man, people are saying. And some people will not vote at all. They just choose not to vote. And so, again, we would be eager to get your perspective on that. And then there's the phenomenon all of a sudden of all of these brilliant, innovative, creative rap activists and artists who are just getting all up in it. So Diddy, you know, who really has done some good work in terms of organizing young people and persuading them to come out, he's endorsed Biden. And he has, however, also called for the creation of a black political party. Interesting. This is the 40th anniversary, actually, of the National Black Independent Political Party. And I just want to know, what does he really know about that? And then you have Ice Cube, you know, another person who's done some, you know, a basketball league and is really doing some movies and some other kind of things. All of a sudden, he is now a political leader. And so he went to meet with Trump. He met with Trump, unbeknownst to many people, but it got revealed with a reactionary, a really, really reactionary black organization to talk about a black agenda. And then he began to talk about reparations. Apparently didn't know much about reparations, but still wanted. So it got very embarrassing for him, and I think he's beginning to recalibrate. And then there was 50 Cent. I mean, I'm sorry, 50 Cent, whatever you call him. He comes out and says, I'm an expert on economics. And I like the Trump's, the Agent Orange's tax. I don't like Biden's program. I like his program. And so he came out with a big endorsement of the Orange Man. But I understand in the last 48 hours, he has backtracked like the moonwalk, better than Michael Jackson, saying now he wants to F Trump, right? Well, I don't know how to tweet, but if I could, I'd be saying, 50 Cent's opinion ain't worth 50 Cent. But anyway, let's see what your opinions are. Give us a call at 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Waiting for indication that we have our callers or callers ready to go. 212-209-2877. And we have, you know, a good maybe 20 minutes to get callers in as we're on the soapbox, and we'll take rapid fire. Questions and answers. And while we're waiting, I just want to also inform people that we are looking forward to on the 5th, the Institute of the Black World 21st Century will be convening a national town hall meeting hosted by the Honorable Roz J. Baraka, Danny Glover's special guest, the first major assembly of black leaders assessing the impact of the 2020 presidential election and the election in general on black people and the Pan-African, black America and the Pan-African world. So stay tuned for that. Actually, you can go to the IBW website right now, IBW21.org, and you can see the promo for that. There's some indication that WPFW is actually going to carry the audio, and perhaps WBAI will do likewise. Again, you can call 212-209-2877 to voice your opinion on the soapbox today on the issues that we've been talking about. 212-209-2877. Really anxious to get your opinion on a number of questions, but really, these instant experts, these instant political leaders who are coming out, you know, as artists and entertainers offering their opinion. Now, I'm really not adverse to that, to be honest about it. But, you know, I sometimes question whether, you know, how informed people are. But again, Ice Cube is all up in it. 50 Cent is all up in it. There's some others who I don't know as well who've come out and they've expressed their opinion as well. And again, Diddy has come out with an endorsement, but he's also calling for a political party. Again, 212-209-2877. Again, waiting for indication that we have callers who are ready to go, and we'll take your calls on these matters. Again, for those of you who listened in, we had really hopefully a very informative segment on the quest for reparations in Elaine, Arkansas, with Dr. Ivor Carruthers, Samuel D. Wood Proctor Conference, as well as Miss Lenora Marshall, who is the vice president of the Elaine Legacy Center. And she's indicating that if you'd like to reach her for further information about Elaine, Arkansas, what transpired, but more importantly, what they are working for in terms of reparatory justice, 870-827-6677, 870-827-6677, will connect you with them. Again, just waiting, where y'all at out there? Waiting for y'all to call in. We got an open line here for y'all to call in and express yourself, as Gary Bird would say, in terms of these issues that we are discussing today. Again, 212-209.
All right, Professor, I guess you're not looking at my emails. We got callers on the line.
Okay, well, I don't see it, so that's why I was saying that. So let's go to our first caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Thank you for taking my call. I would like to pose a question, and it's on reparations in regards to the artist that you mentioned. I think you said P. Diddy and Ice Cube, etc. You know, we are a people that we learn every day. And some of us may learn today. Some of us may have learned yesterday. But as a people, I think it would only benefit us if we were to come together and educate those who are not well-versed in what we believe we know to be the correct thing. With that, I would like to ask, in reference to reparation, and we have had Dr. Claude Anderson, Power Economics, and a number of other dirty secret truths, a number of books that he wrote, and he has been on the battlefield for over 50 years. I believe he's going on 83 years or 82 years old at present. And with such men who have been in the field, who have gained knowledge, who've worked under presidents, my question is, do you have a Dr. Claude Anderson affiliated with the reparation movement that you are heading? Do you have James Short, even a Dr. Umar Johnson, who has purchased and is opening two new schools for people of African descent?
Well, let me just, because we really, really appreciate your question, but we really want to keep it short. And we do need to educate people to the struggle, which is why we do have a National African American Reparations Commission. It does not include all of the people who could potentially be spokespersons. We're obviously familiar with the work of Dr. Claude Anderson and others. His Black Labor, White Wealth is a classic that is on our reading list. We have a extensive online reparations resource center on the IBW website, which includes information from Dr. Claude Anderson and others. And we also have an extraordinarily capable and qualified commission that people can go to the website, ibw21.org, and actually see who they are. I don't want to sort of recite all 17 of them right now, but obviously a commission is a commission. They can't necessarily include everyone, but it is representative of the long experience of Black people, you know, in America on this question, particularly people who have taken their lead from Queen Mother Audley Moore, and of course includes in COBRA under the leadership of Cam Howard and Mashariki, Sister Mashariki, who are the co-chairs of that organization, in COBRA, without question, having been the organization spearheading the struggle in the last half century like no other. So appreciate your call, and we do want to educate people about reparations, which is why I continue to talk about it here on the show. Let's go to our next listener. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate you are bringing to light the Elaine, Arkansas massacre. And, you know, easily you could do a separate show on that. I just wanted to stress the importance of getting our Black organized labor financially and otherwise involved in spreading the legacy of Elaine, Arkansas. I think that was one of the last atrocities of what they call the Red Summer. And it's interesting, that was probably the most mortalities, and also because it was happening because of labor organization in the South.
Right.
So I think I want to stress that point. And if I could offer one minor criticism, I think we want to focus on the secular aspects of the event. You know, I'm a proud Christian, but this is an important issue for all segments of the Black community, whether Christian or not. And we want to, as Malcolm X pointed out, you know, we're not persecuted because we are Baptists or Muslims. So as we head to Black Solidarity Day, we want to bring forward the legacy of Elaine and make our children in particular know what's going on. Again, thank you for your service.
All right. Appreciate your call. And by the way, the fact that Samuel David Proctor Conference is involved does in no way mean that it's only for Christians. Certainly for many, many years, the Nation of Islam has been very supportive of reparations. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and ministers of the nation have been involved. Imam Talib Abdul Rashid, the Mosque of Islamic Brotherhood. So no, this is not something that is exclusively for Christians, Muslims, or anyone else. It is for Black people. But there is a way in which some of our faith organizations have been very crucial in laying out a theological rationale for why reparations is important. 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. This is the soapbox, opportunity for you to get a quick question in, or more importantly, just sort of getting responses to the issues we've talked about. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hi, how you doing? Good afternoon. I have heard about the Elaine massacre. I've read a little bit about it. Very sad story, very terrible story. That was 1919, right? There was another thing that happened in 1919 in Chicago, a terrible race riot that happened in the summertime just before, you know, like, you know, the White Sox, Black Sox World Series that happened in 1919. A terrible thing that happened in Chicago, like on a beach by Lake Michigan. You might want to tell people about that sometime. Very sad story. I do have a question, though. Okay, I have some friends that are Black people that are conservative. Now, what they care about is making money and God, and family and very conservative values. They don't really care much about reparations. They want to do it on their own. So, what's your evaluation of something like that? I think they're great people.
They may be great people. The short answer is if they choose to do it on their own, not everybody in the Black community may be down with the whole concept of reparations, which is really talking about the collective repair, really, of the damages inflicted on African-Americans, not only physically, but the culture, the spiritual and cultural destruction of a people and the trauma that has ensued from that, but also the racially discriminatory policies like the Homestead Act, like the FHA and redlining, all of these, and the drug war, which have targeted specifically black people. It is to repair that damage. And there's some people who feel that they don't want to be involved, and that's fine. But there are many, many more who feel now some 70% plus in the black community fully on board with reparations after really a long struggle to engage our community around it, because I think many people who have supported reparations, they just didn't think it was possible. But we're now standing on the brink of H.R. 40, a bill to not just study whether reparations should be awarded or warranted, but a bill to study actual reparations proposals. If this election turns out the way many of us hope it will turn out, that bill is actually going to be passed into law. It will be signed. And there will be then a discussion about what reparations looks like, both in terms of what we call direct benefits, but equally important, community benefits to repair communities like Selma, Elaine, Tulsa, and other communities where these massacres have taken place. So people have a right to choose and to do as they want to. And you know, if there's some benefits and there are conservatives who don't want to take the benefits, they don't have to. All right, let's go to our next caller, 212-209-2877. Got about a minute, maybe
hey,
one more.
Hey, how you doing? Hey, how
good
you
afternoon.
Doing?
Good afternoon.
If you didn't vote yet, get out there and vote and get this madman out of the White House. Unfortunately, his base is still going to be there because what's feeding them is identity politics and the demonization of white men, who, by the way, majority of white men are good, decent people. You know, I mean,
so I don't know about anybody out here, at least the demonizing white men. Who's doing that?
Oh, come on. Black nationalism, women's lib. I mean, identity politics basically lives on that. The demonization of white men.
Well, I totally disagree with that. I mean, white men run. White men have been in charge, continue to be in charge by and large. So if white men are threatened, if white men are threatened because their space is being made for women and various people of different sexual orientations and races, then that's a problem. But I don't, you know, nobody is out here fighting for reparations as a way of demonizing black white men. I totally disagree with that. Let me just squeeze in one more caller. Let's take our final caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage.
No more calls.
Okay. Okay. I thought we had
there's no one else.
Oh, okay. All right. Good. I don't know what happened, too, because your email is just popping through. There's something going wrong here. But that's okay. All right. Well, anyway, we had a vigorous discussion. Next week, we'll continue. Though next week, it'll be on the eve of the election. And our special guest will be the Honorable Roz J. Baraka. That's our monthly State of Newark report. And I'm sure he's going to have something to say about the election. I'm sure you will, too. It will literally be the next day. And we'll also be talking about this big town hall meeting that we're going to be having that features the president of the NAACP, the president of the Urban League, the president of the National Congress of Black Women, the National Coalition for Black Civic Participation, the Black Women's Roundtable. I mean, we have the Movement for Black Lives. We got Jaziri X, the hip-hop activist. We got Larry Ham. We got Frederica Bay. We got Danny Glover. It will be an awesome town hall meeting that will be assessing the impact of the election on Black America and the Pan-African world, and that will be 2 days after. That will pass up Wednesday, but on Thursday, 7 or 9 o'clock p.m. on the IBW website, and perhaps WBAI will be picking up the sound for that as well. So this is the professor. Again, take care of each other. Go to the listening line if you need to hear some, get a sympathetic voice, 877-719-1117, or to connect with Elaine, Arkansas, 870-827-6677. We'll see you again next week here on Vantage Point. We'll be right back.